Gary, thanks very much for joining us once again. So Alaman TT Races, now that the Northwest 200 has concluded, in your position as a clerk of the course, just very generally to start with, where are we at with the preparations? How are they going?
Yeah, the preparations have gone really well this year. I'm pleased to say we have been for some while now at the stage of dotting the I's and crossing the T's. The preparations have gone really well in all areas. The course itself, the TT course itself, is probably looking the best I've seen it in years, really, and that is real testament to John Barton, who's the deputy clerk of the course, or one of the deputy clerk of the courses, and also the course inspection officer, but also to the Department of Infrastructure. The help and support we've had from the DOI with John has been absolutely outstanding, and we've got there was various resurfacing and patching across several locations on the course, but the major areas this year are Braddon Bridge, the inside of Sarah's Cottage, the inside of Sulby Bridge, Kerrimore 2, which is obviously on the just past Ginger Hall, and Glen Tramman. But no, it's all looking really good.
In terms of, again, you've said there were a couple of areas identified going into this year that maybe required just a little bit of extra attention. How does the amount of areas that you've identified compared to in previous years with the amount of work you've had to do?
It's on par, really. I mean, what we do, obviously, we're very conscious that the DOI has a budget to work to, and obviously that budget is island wide as opposed to just being specific to the TT course. So, again, going back to John Barton, I mean, like, experienced, he hung his leathers up last year after 33 years. So a very experienced competitor, obviously raced 33 years on the TT course. So with John's experience, he feeds, he works ahead, he looks at areas that needs immediate attention, but that's kind of patchwork, really. But any major areas like the resurfacing we've done at Braddon Bridge and Glen Tramman, and those I've just mentioned, we try to give the DOI at least a year's advance so they can get the budget in place. But as I say, the relationship we've got with DOI is absolutely outstanding, and it's a big thanks to them guys, and what they do is how the TT course is looking at the moment.
On the financial aspect, not just the maintenance, but the wider side of things, how, as organisers, have you found it this year coping financially with putting the TT on, given the rise in global costs that we've seen in so many areas over the last couple of years?
Well, from our point of view, obviously, we get a budget which we apply to, as a race organiser, we apply for a budget from the Ironman government, from the Department for Enterprise, and obviously, we are very conscious of rising costs, and accordingly, we tailor our budget as much as we can. Obviously, we don't go over the top, or we try not to go over the top, but equally, we need to make sure that we've got enough budget in place to cater for the, for safety, to make sure that the TT course is as safe as possible, and other areas like we've now got, for this year we've increased the number of digital flags around the course. That's been a major success over the last 2 years, first introduced in TT 2022, but they've proven to be worth the weight in gold, really. They're really good at giving the competitors as much, or we position them where they've got the greatest visibility, and the reports coming back from the competitors is that they're the best thing we've introduced for a number of years. So, that's just one aspect of the budget that we do we put in place to increase safety. But, from a budget point of view across the board, we are mindful of increasing costs. And, we although obviously we have to put the event on, we try to cut the cloth accordingly, but without detracting from the event itself.
When you mentioned competitors there, just turning to them for a moment. Naturally, I correct me if I'm wrong here, but the likes of yourselves and the ACU will get feedback from competitors, their teams and other officials, for example. So what were the main bits of feedback you got from last year that you're maybe taking into this year?
There wasn't really last year, to be honest. I mean, the year before, obviously, the highlight of the year before was Sulby Bridge, which we put in place for 2023, and that That went down really well. No, this year there wasn't a great deal of feedback from the course from the competitors last year. But again, it's the John Barton's out on the course every day, as is Milky Quail, of course, and the feedback we've had from those two, plus of course the likes of the local lads, Connor, Dave Molyneux, they always give us good feedback. So based on the experience of those guys, we approach the DOI and they do the work accordingly.
You mentioned that with regards to, I suppose, course maintenance. I suppose what I was getting at there, did you have any feedback in terms of, let's say, the scheduling, for example, and how that works?
Yeah, we do. I mean, last year, obviously, we was blessed with fantastic weather. The schedule for this year is the same as last year. We carry on with the 10 races, so each two races per class. With that, we're looking at, obviously, we started on Bank Holiday Monday on 27th of May with free practice and qualifying. How we've tailored the schedule is we've looked at less evening qualifying and more daytime qualifying, hence why we've moved to the Bank Holiday Monday and the Friday afternoon. So obviously that's two nights evening practice we've taken out. And the daytime qualifying on Friday, the final Friday afternoon, Q5, qualifying period 5, enables the teams then to, it gives the teams more opportunity or more time to work on the bikes before the first race day on Saturday, 1st of June. But yeah, we do listen to the competitors. I mean, obviously last year, with the weather, it was a long event. Everybody got lots of laps, which obviously we're mindful of. But also the new schedule, as with previous schedules, there are still lots of contingency options that we've got in case of any possible delays.
And it was announced fairly recently that the ACU has signed new long-term deals with both the TTMA and the Manx Road Racing Medical Services. With regards to the marshalling side of things, what's your understanding of how well the course can be staffed this year?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm in very close contact with the TTMA almost on a daily basis. And where we stand at the moment is we are, certainly in terms of the marshals who have signed on already, we are on par, if not slightly above where we was this time last year. So, with over 9 days to go, 9-10 days to go to first practice, we are confident that we'll be good to go on the 27th of May. But again, that's all testament to the TTMA. We've got led by Jane Corn, of course, the chairperson, and the Andy Priestley, who's the deputy chairman. They lead a good team. We've got a good board of directors, and we've got a new improved IMC course now. That's much more improved than what it used to be. So in terms of marshalling, the guys do us proud. And we need 543 marshals to start any session. And we're pretty confident that we'll be good to go on the first day of practice.
And when it comes to competitors, just turning to entries for a moment, let's start just with the solo side of things. First off, how are the entries this year compared to previous years?
Yeah, no, it's all, every class. I mean, obviously, we closed the entry process closed a month earlier this year. We closed on the 31st of January as opposed to the end of February. So, that's to give people more time to prepare for the event itself. But we're oversubscribed in all classes. Obviously, we have from our side, we have the race management team. Once the entries are closed, we then go through and do the acceptances and declines. But the level of entry was the same, if not above, previous years. So in terms of health, competitor-wise, the TT is in a really, really good place.
For a lot of people who compete in the TT, whether it's solos or sidecars, it could be a huge financial cost depending on a team or a rider's or both's circumstances. So just how financially challenging is it, do you believe, to actually just make it to the TT and make it financially viable as a rider and as a team?
Yeah, across the whole of motorcycle sport, well, motor racing really, costs have risen. Obviously, the bikes have got more, technically more advanced. The cost of bikes themselves have increased, and everybody's mindful of that. But I don't think the TT or road racing on roads in general has got more expensive than any other facet of motorsport, really. It's just a thing that motorsport in general, as with as with everything else, has just increased as the years go by.
And from an organisational side of things, during practice and race week, you've already mentioned a couple of names of those that are crucial to it. How, in terms of, I suppose, numbers in the likes of the paddock, you've mentioned a couple of those, like the rider liaison officers, for example, and all those there. How tricky or not tricky is it to have enough people to make sure everything runs smoothly in the paddock?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the paddock is a massive part of the events, and you know, the TT organisation split in two parts. So we've got the AC events, there's the race organisers. So we kind of, if you look at pit lane and think of the white wall down pit lane, everything on the Glen Cutcheries road side of the white wall is an ACU Events Limited responsibility as race organisers, including obviously Park Firm, May Assembly Area, and the pit lane, and everything paddock side is belongs to or is the responsibility of the promoter, so the Department for Enterprise. But certainly on both, given what the TT is and how big it is, and you know, it's standing in world motorsport, you know, we have no issues, no problems staffing on both sides, really. I think you know, for me personally, to be clerk of the course of the TT, yes, this is my 12th year. It's an absolute privilege to be in that position, and I think everybody involved in the TT, whether it's on the promotion side or the race organizer as an official, everybody feels the same. You know, it's an absolute privilege to work on the event, be involved, and yeah, we do what we do to deliver the races annually in the best way we can. To the global audience.
Just a couple more questions, and one that I always seem to come back to, but just to get your view on it again. But I think for people who may not have heard it beforehand, obviously one thing that always comes up with this new schedule over the last couple of years is adaptability. If there's disruption of any kind, and there's a lot of races to fit in there, so how confident are you that if there is disruption, whether it's weather or other matters, that you can make sure that the fans and the competitors are getting the best experience possible if changes need to take place?
Yeah, this is my 12th year now as clerk of the course, and I think I'm certainly not afraid of delaying practice or qualification or indeed races if necessary. I mean, for me, the most important thing is safety. It's got to be, the conditions around the course have got to be as safe as they possibly can be, you know, before we set any bikes off. So I'm certainly not adverse to putting in delays. The schedule has got enough contingency in it. We've still got Monday available and Thursday available to us. And you know, as we saw in TT 219, we went 5 days where we didn't turn a wheel because of the pure, you know, the poor weather. You know, I think there was a lot of cloud and mist and rain and God knows what else thrown at us for 5 days. So we pushed the schedule back. There was myself, Paul Phillips, and a couple of others. We just worked through the schedule, came up with options, and then obviously that concluded in the 5 races in a day. And certainly, you know, so far as this TT and any other TT is concerned, if we were faced with the same thing, the same conditions again or same problems again, we would do something similar. It's yeah, we'd never compromise safety just to try and get all the races in. There's enough contingency out there, enough options available, and enough experience on the ground to change the schedule accordingly.
And just my final question on something you just mentioned there, safety as well. The different measures have been brought in for different reasons over the last couple of years, adding to what was previously there to try and make it as safe as possible. But you and others have said before, there is an inherent risk anyway in road racing in any way, shape or form. So how important is it that now and going into the future, whilst trying to keep the competitors as safe as possible, that you make sure you don't lose the balance between safety but also the spectacle out on the course as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, we we're there to put a show on. You know, obviously, a lot of people come across to the island, and obviously, we've got a global audience as well. So, yeah, we're very mindful of the spectacle of the TT, but equally, you know, the enhancements, safety enhancements we've brought into the TT course is well known to a lot of riders from short circuits anyway. Obviously, the digital flags. We, as I said earlier, we've got 41 digital flags now around the course. We're forever improving or maintaining, improving the direct to cell barriers around the course and other course safety improvements. So as of whatever we put in place safety-wise, I don't think it would compromise the spectacle of the event. It just, I think everybody appreciates the event has got to be as safe as it possibly can be. And as long as we can continue keeping the event safe, then or put it as safe as it possibly can be, given the inherent risks of motorsport, then the TT's got a bright and rosy future.
Thank you for having the stamina to make it to the end of the Manx Radio Sportscast. You're clearly someone who has their eye on the ball at all times. Want to hear more about the latest sporting news across the Isle of Man and much more? Then might I recommend you take the plunge and subscribe to this series or a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so that, in a flash, all of our finest moments take a winner's place on your smartphone. Thank you.